Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
A lot of spring football going on. I don't mind. Cal's got the spring football showcase 2:30 on the Pac-12 Network. Tomorrow, Roxy Bernstein, Michael Bumpus on the call. Before that, though, Roxy Bernstein joining us right here, right now. Here he is. Roxy, how you doing?
I'm great, John. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Is there any nostalgia for you in the broadcast tomorrow, or can you allow yourself to get sucked into that?
I've been trying as good as I can to compartmentalize the whole season, if you will, last year. Yeah. When I did the Utah-Colorado game, my last regular season game on football on Pac-12 Network Thanksgiving weekend. And I think I did a pretty good job of it all year, just completely throwing myself in that game, whether it was Oregon against Stanford or Oregon State against Cal. I was just throwing myself into the game and not wanting to think of the big picture in terms of the future. And then I got a call like about an hour before that last game by one of my bosses at Pac-12 Network, who called, you know, just to check in, hey, to thank me for everything. I go, you got to call me now? So, and then all of a sudden, yeah, for the next half hour, I was a mess, John, because it started dawning on me that this is the last Pac-12 football game that I'll be calling. And I got through basketball okay. Vegas was a little surreal for the men's basketball tournament. And here we are headed down the home stretch toward the Pac-12 baseball tournament. That, to be honest with you, will be a weird, surreal experience for me because I will be calling the last game that will be a live broadcast on the Pac-12 Network.
Is that the semifinal? Is that right on that game? Yeah.
So I'll have the semifinal on the Friday night, then I'll have the championship the next night on ESPN2.
Yeah.
But they're both going to be just strange. And look, there's a game to be played, but I know I'm going to get choked up at some point. I just know. And, you know, and Ashley Adamson beautifully signed off from Vegas at the Pac-12 tournament. I just hope I can do something half as good as Ashley did.
Roxy, let's talk a little football, and then I want to talk about broadcasting in general. But give me an idea, when you go into a spring game, how do you approach that maybe differently than a normal football game during the regular season?
Well, the spring showcase, as you alluded to, with Cal tomorrow, it's more of a glorified practice than it is an actual game. Like, some schools do a game, they divide up teams. I know Utah's done that over the years. So there is that kind of competition. Now, Cal's going to be doing some competition stuff. They're going to be doing some scrimmage-type stuff, but it's not going to be a game. So I think you go more big picture about the program in a situation like this. You go position group by position group, and with so much roster turnover these days, with the transfer portal, guys coming in and out, I think you got to update the fans and clue them in about who's there still, who's gone, who are the newcomers, who can have a big impact. And that's the way Michael Bumpus and I are going to approach it, about, okay, what's going on with this Cal program and what's next season going to look like, at least at this point, because it could change again next week with the transfer portal window opening again.
Yeah, I have to think, you know, some coaches, they'll say, well, I don't mind the portal. Others will tell you out now that, you know, the spring is a terrible time to lose a guy, you know, unless it's somebody that you're kind of giving your blessing and giving a release to. It's not a good time to lose a player who's a contributor because you don't have a chance to replace them. The offense of Cal has been a question for a couple seasons. Do you have any sense if they will be better on the offensive side of the ball?
I think they will be. Now, there's a new offensive coordinator, essentially. Mike Blesch took over toward the end of last season, when they parted ways with Jake Spavital. And he was the OC for the bowl game. Now has had a full off season. And the big key for Cal, John, is their offensive line has struggled in recent years. And they've addressed some of those issues. There's a little bit more experience up front. That's going to be the key. Cal's running back room is loaded. I think they're solid at receiver and tight end. I wouldn't say they're great. And then there's the quarterback play. Last year, they turned the ball over too much. Fernando Mendoza has got to get better, and he's going to get pushed by Chandler Rogers. There's no guarantee Fernando's going to be the quarterback. But I think they will be better on that side of the football, and it hinges from the offensive line just because it's a group that will have more experience and more depth to it.
The move to the ACC, we haven't spent a lot of time on this show talking about what Cal's up against. You know, what are they up against in your mind as they go off to a new conference?
Well, I think they feel confident about their chances to compete right away, John, in the ACC, that they don't view this league as that daunting, that they're going to have an opportunity, and they feel there's some upward momentum. The way they finished last season, by winning those final three games, to beat Washington State, win the big game against Stanford, and then go down to the Rose Bowl and hammer UCLA to get to a bowl game, and that's had a carryover effect. And there's a lot of excitement in terms of what's new and the new schedule. For example, instead of playing Oregon and Washington and Oregon State, they're still going to play Oregon State. But now you have Miami, Florida State, NC State, Wake Forest. These are your new conference foes. And so there's some unknowns with Cal, but they're confident in their ability to step right in and compete because they feel they're going to have a pretty good football team in the fall.
Yeah, I'm looking at them and Stanford, and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, there are a lot of schools that in the conference that I think are going to be glad they're not playing USC, Oregon, Washington, maybe Stanford and Cal at the front of the line there. We're talking to Roxy Bernstein, Pac-12 Network. You know, looking around the conference, I'll just pick your brain a little bit. How do you think the four schools that are going to the Big Ten are going to fare?
It's going to be an interesting ride for them. And look, people are making a big deal out of the travel. And, John, I don't think it's that big of a deal in football. Now, if you're talking to me about basketball or volleyball or soccer or softball, baseball, whatever it is, that becomes more of an issue. But in football, look, it's going to be four or five trips that you're going to make, and it's once every couple of weeks. But the way Oregon has been recruiting recently and with the talent that Dan Lanning has, I think they're going to step right in and be right near the top of the league. Certainly Ohio State and Michigan with the talent level that they have. But why can't Oregon be right there? And certainly there's some questions about USC. They have to be better, especially defensively. And last year was, I think, a huge disappointing season in a lot of aspects for USC. I'm anxious to see the Jed Fish transition at UW and his stamp on how that program will move forward. And UCLA right now, I think they're far behind everybody else. I think UCLA could really struggle with this move to the Big Ten personally.
Yeah, I agree. I think not just the timing of Chip Kelly leaving, but I just think they're just not as positioned well as some others. And, you know, for the same reason we're saying Cal and Stanford might have an easier go of it in the ACC, I think UCLA is going to run into some opponents in the Big Ten that they're not built to beat. Roxy, the Big 12 teams that are departing, particularly Colorado. I got to know what you think of Colorado's second season under Coach Prime. What do you expect?
I'm not sure what to expect, to be honest with you, right? There's all this hype around them, and they got off to that great start last year. And people were jumping on the bandwagon. Colorado's in the top 25. But then they came back to reality, and maybe they were outperforming their talent level, or at least the cohesiveness that you expect a football team to have early. But then it caught up with them. I do think they'll be better. I do think it's a league that's more winnable than the Pac-12. So I would expect Colorado, I think with Shedeur Sanders and some of the talent that they have, I would think Colorado would be a 500 team, maybe a little bit better next year, to make another step forward. And I thought they made some strides this year under Deion Sanders. But them, and I still think that Utah might be the best team in that league, and I think they could be the team to beat in the Big 12 moving forward because of what Kyle Whittingham has done. And now you have Cam Rising coming back. I think Utah might be the team to beat in the Big 12 next year.
Yeah, I'm looking at them, and I'm going, okay, who's going to beat them? And then I was kind of looking at Arizona State and Arizona, and I'm thinking, you know, I like Brett Brennan at Arizona. I'd love to hear what you think of him. But Arizona State is 5-15 in the last 20 meetings with Oregon and USC. They don't have to play those schools anymore. They can play with Texas Tech. They can play with Kansas State. They can play with Houston. It just feels to me like there's not automatic losses on the schedule right now for Arizona and Arizona State.
The one thing I'm worried about, John, though, is you're seeing some potential transfers. There's rumblings that Jaden Rashada is going to leave ASU, yeah, that Elijah Badger is going to go. That's trouble because those are two key guys I think that Kenny Dillingham was counting on. And so all of a sudden now Arizona State, who maybe had some solid footing from a year ago, and there's a lot of question marks surrounding that program right now. And you go down the road to Tucson, and look, I'm biased. John, Brent Brennan and I have been good friends since we were 7 years old. We grew up together, and we're still very close. And I think the world of Brent, I think the world of his wife, Courtney, and his family of three kids, and I'm so happy for him, and it's a great spot for him to be in. He's so excited about being in Tucson with Arizona. Of course, his wife, Courtney, went there. His brother, Brad, was his standout receiver there. So I think the world of Brent, he did just an unbelievable job at San Jose State, considering the resources and what he had to deal with. And now that he's going to have those resources, I think he's got the potential to turn Arizona into a team that year in, year out, I think that can contend in the Big 12 for the championship.
Roxy Bernstein, Pac-12 Network with us. He'll be on the Cal spring game tomorrow. Roxy, Vern Lundquist hangs it up at the Masters, great career. Jim Nance is sort of scaling back. You know, who did you grow up idolizing or maybe even emulating as a broadcaster?
Bill King was my guy, John. Growing up here in the Bay Area, I was infatuated with him even as a kid. I knew this is what I wanted to do. I had a close family friend who was in the business working for an NBA team who's just retired from the Bulls a couple of years ago, Neil Funk, who was doing their TV for a long time. And he was the radio voice of the Kansas City Kings way back when. I was probably 4 or 5 years old. And this is certainly a different time and place. But I was able to sit with him courtside at a game when they were playing the Warriors. And I got to see what he did. And it made such an impression on me. And I fell in love with the art of broadcasting at a very young age. I came to the realization I probably wasn't going to the NBA. And I figured, what's the next best thing for me to do? And it's talk for a living and talk about sports and talk and go to games and get paid to talk about it. And so Bill King was a guy that I would listen to falling asleep every night, and Hank Greenwald. Lon Simmons is another one. Here in the Bay Area, we were so spoiled with them. And then you go from Hank Greenwald to John Miller, who's been a little bit of a mentor to me, as was Bill. Barry Tompkins is another one that I've been close with for so long. And they've all had a huge impact and helped shape the broadcaster I am today. And I don't know where I'd be if I didn't have those influences on me because, look, I'm lucky. I get to work in the toy department of life. My work isn't work, and I don't think I've worked a day in my life. I get paid to do something I love. And I'm going to get to go to my alma mater tomorrow, Cal, talk football for an hour and a half on TV with Michael Bumpus. Then I'm heading to North Carolina on Sunday to do a Stanley Cup playoff game Monday night for ESPN. And I thoroughly enjoy everything I do, and I don't know where I'd be without those influences, to be honest with you.
Now you grew up in the Bay Area. I grew up in the Bay Area. I'm a South Bay kid. You were a Peninsula kid. Give me an idea. One of the things I notice about you is the fact that, like, you can do basketball. You can do college basketball. You can do college football. You can do hockey. You were the Marlins guy, 3 years with the Marlins. Like, you can do everything. Was that because you were just hungry for, hey, I need to, you know, take every opportunity that's in front of me? Or was it the Bay Area had sort of this buffet of different sports? Or what caused that?
I think it's a combo of both, John, to be honest with you, because look, the Sharks didn't really come into existence till I was in high school. But I was infatuated with hockey as well from the Miracle on Ice from when I was a kid, and it had a lasting impact. But you know, growing up in the Bay Area, nobody played hockey. I didn't have any buddies that played hockey. But I always loved the game. And when the opportunity presented itself to to call some hockey, and I just kind of gravitated toward it. But basketball was kind of my first, along with baseball and certainly football as well. And I figured, look, the more versatile I can make myself, the more I can do, the harder it is to replace me if somebody ever decides to get rid of me.
Right.
You know? Well, they look at the kid. What does he do? Well, he does this. Okay, we might have to hire 3 or 4 guys to take his spot. And, you know, I'm in the habit of always saying yes, which at times can drive my wife crazy. But, you know, I've always prided myself in my availability and my professionalism to be able to do what I do and to be prepared for every single broadcast, and no matter where it airs, that I throw the same type of effort into everything I do, and I take a lot of pride in it, and I enjoy the variety. And people always ask me, John, you know, what's your favorite sport to call? And I said, you know, and I've got 2 kids. You can ask me which one's my favorite. I feel the same way, that I love it all. I love the variety. I love the different aspects and relationships I have with the different sports, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
I'm going to play a clip, one of your favorite broadcasters, and then I want you to tell me why this is great. And here's Bill King.
Okay. Oh, the best.
Bill King coming up, an iconic call, Raiders, you'll know it.
Uh-huh.
The crowd takes up a chant of defense. Robiski and Banaszak are the back. Slot right, Branch inside. Bradshaw, Stabler back. Here comes the rush, he sidesteps. Can he throw? He can't! The ball flipped forward is loose. A wild scramble. 2 seconds on the clock. Kasper grabbing the ball. It is rolled a fumble. Kasper has recovered in the end zone. The Oakland Raiders have scored on the most zany, unbelievable, absolutely impossible dream of a play. Madden is on the field. He wants to know if it's real. They said yes. Get your big butt out of here. He does. There's nothing real in the world anymore. The Raiders won the football game. The Chargers are standing, looking at each other. They don't believe it. Nobody believes it. I don't know if the Raiders believe it. It's not real. 52,000 people minus a few lonely Raider fans are stunned. A man would be a fool to ever try and write a drama and make you believe it. This one will be relived forever.
September 10th, 1978. In San Diego, 21-20, the Raiders win. What makes that a great call?
The holy roller. First off, Bill's command of the language in his description. Nobody's been as good as Bill. That he can paint the picture better than anybody. And that's when he was the voice of the Warriors for years. And that's who I emulated and wanted to be like, because of his ability to describe the play and make you see it as if you're there. And that's what he encaptures there. And his relationship, for example, with John Madden, get your big butt out of here. Like, yeah. What other play-by-play could say that about the head coach? But I think his command and his ability to capture the moment is just phenomenal. And he took you right to the play. I felt like I was on the field at Jack Murphy Stadium there for the Holy Roller, the way he describes it. And and the other thing is, when you get a crazy, zany play like he had, there's the ability to kind of freeze for a second to make sure that you're actually processing what you're seeing. And Bill's instantaneous ability to relay that to the audience is incredible. And, like, right there, it just epitomizes everything about Bill King as the broadcaster and why he was so revered here in the Bay Area and so cherished.
That moment where he goes, John Madden is on the field. He wants to know if it's real. They said, yes, get your big butt out of here. He does. There's nothing real in the world anymore. The Raiders have won the game. And then I love this part, Roxy. 52,000 people, minus a few lonely Raider fans, are stunned. Like, to come up with that, you know, on the cue, you know, he's not anticipating this play. Nobody could have.
No, and it's just like, for example, when Joe Starkey called the play for Cal. There's no way to anticipate that. Yet Joe was able to capture the moment and the emotion of it. There's no way to prepare for something like that. All you can do is prepare for the game and have as much information as possible, because during the course of a game, the information that we have, I maybe use 5 to 10% of what I've got when you're going to need something. And in a situation like that, which is so zany and wild, there is no way to prepare yourself for that. Nobody ever seen anything like that before. And he was right on the entire way and never lost sight of the message across of what was transpiring on the field.
Roxy Breen game tomorrow, Pac-12 Network. For those of you that want to tune in, and I know you do, 2:30 on the Pac-12 Network. Pac-12 Network's got all the games, all the spring games. Roxy Bernstein, thank you. Have a great game. I'll catch you down the road.
You got it. My pleasure, John. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
There he goes. Bill King. Oh, man. Nothing in the world is real. I love that. Love that call. Leave it here. Our big splash.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.